One thing I forgot to mention, which you, I think, will appreciate, this thing on the bird came from the Pegasus lady.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Pegasus lady.
Does she know this artist?
Oh, the lady on the chart.
Yeah. I don't know if she knows her or not. I got to ask her.
Tell the story. That was interesting.
Oh, my God, the story has gone on and on and on. Where did I leave off?
When she called about the truck. The night and said she saw that truck.
Down the truck. And then you had one more after that.
Oh, yeah. Five more after that.
Yeah. When she met the people that were going to have the influence. Somebody, okay.
Yeah.
That, I think,
and then the summer job next to the Pegasus building. And I was talking in Toronto about her. The truck drove by again.
Oh, really?
And I think it's driven, she has seen it once more. It's like six or seven times.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is she a writer?
Yeah. She's getting her MFA in screenwriting. Should I tell the story? You know the story.
Yes, yeah. You said it a couple times, but I don't remember all of them.
Well, it started out that she was stuck in writing a script and just called me up and was kind of upset. And she's just a pal. And I explored the story of Pegasus and Perseus and Medusa. You know that story? You know, Perseus is the hero. Medusa is the snake-haired witch. He goes and cuts off Medusa's head, looking at her in the shield because you can't look at her directly. And then a horse springs out of her neck when he cuts it off, and that's Pegasus. And when the horse's hoof hits the ground, it gives birth to the spring of the Muses, which is why it's said to be about creativity. The artist has to slice up the negative voice. Out of the negative voice really comes the creative drive. And so I told her the story. You know, I'm not her therapist, I think it's the friend. I said, yeah, this is what you're going through. You've got to learn how to fight that witch and fight that Medusa. And then when she turned the paper in, which was midnight in L.A., of course, she got it in at the last minute. It was 3 o'clock in Indianapolis. She called me up to thank me. Thank you so much. And when she was telling me the story, a truck with Pegasus written on it drove by. I think what I might not have told you, what was written underneath Pegasus, 9 times I am knocked down, 10 times I stand up.
That was on the truck?
That was on the truck. When she saw it the second time, she noticed it. Yeah. And then it appeared again, and saw like a couple weeks later. Oh, then she went to a bookstore and knocked after that at midnight, and everything's open in L.A., so she went to a bookstore, knocked over a bookstand, and a book by published by Pegasus Press fell in her hands. Mm-hmm. Then she went to get some gas at a gas station, at Marathon gas station, which has a Pegasus on it. And then the truck drove by again, and then she got a summer job working next in a law firm next to the Pegasus building in L.A., and then she got finally got a job helping a successful writer. Successful in the sense he's selling his scripts. They don't get published, but the rich directors buy these scripts, so they've got them in case they want to do it. So essentially buying copyright rights. And so this Spielberg had apparently bought a script from this guy, and again, it may never get published, but he's, you know, if he might not do it, probably won't. But anyway, this guy is selling scripts, and he asked my friend, because he's a graduate of the school too, asked my friend to edit the work, and it was about Pegasus. So it's just, and then I was talking about it one weekend, talking about synchronicity. I told that example while I was talking. The truck drove by again. Well, like the next day, it drove by again. She called me up to tell me.
To tell her
I'll root for. Oh, I told her. Oh, yeah. Oh, I told her. And, you know, and she's a Jung fan. I mean, she loves Jung and is very sympathetic to good stuff. And then literally when I got home after our talk with the fire, that was in my mailbox, that bird essay. Yeah. Okay. Page 24, we'll start now. Now we're starting, what we've done up to now is pretty much introductory. Now we're going to just start on the dreams. Because this dream is the dream, one of the first dreams from when he's back in Switzerland. Through the post, I receive a casket. Inside it is an apparatus for the experimental investigation of cosmic rays. Next to it is a tall man, a tall blonde man. He seems to be somewhat younger than me, maybe between 30 and 40. At this time, Pally would have been 46. He says you must force the water up higher than the houses in the city so that the city dwellers will believe you. Then behind the apparatus in the little box, I notice a bunch of keys, eight in all, hanging in a circle with the key bits hanging down. Now, this is Pally's own comment to the dream on page 25. The water in the city are allusions to earlier dreams. In those dreams, there was a dark male figure playing a role who appeared as a Persian and who had not been accepted at the Institute of Technology. Remember, that's the ITA. Contrast, in other words, he's in contrast to the prevailing scientific collective opinion. This is all Pally speaking. The blonde and the Persian may be dual aspects of one and the same figure. They never appear together. This figure has an extremely psychopompous character. It means guiding character. And has a similar function to Mercury with the alchemists, or Mercurius, who he's talked about. He is not the same as the wise old man, also familiar from dreams, although the main difference is that of age. It was only in June of the following year that I dreamed that the water had drained off. So let's just recap. Earlier, Pally had a dream that it was a Persian who was causing the flood. Here, it's a blonde man. So Pally links the two up. So it's introducing to us a dream figure that we'll be looking at. Sometimes he's called the Persian. Sometimes he's called the blonde man. And he will eventually be named the stranger. And at the very end, he becomes the master. He's got four names. It's pretty much the same figure, with some differences, but we're circumambulating, you know, a content of the unconscious that's showing up in a couple of different personifications. And he's going to represent this knowledge that we've talked about, the knowledge that needs to be incorporated. He would represent the new point of view, where matter and spirit aren't two different things, where time is seen in its full extent, where power is not the motive behind scientific research, and so on. We'll be following him all through the course. But I just want to give you a bird's eye view of what. So we'll be seeing this dark woman, and we'll be seeing this Persian blonde man, stranger master figure. Be the two of the main players in Pally's dreams. You can maybe see already, I'm anticipating, but sometimes a preview is helpful, that the dark anima is going to be the sexual dimension of what he has to go through to realize this experience. And the master, or stranger, etc., Persian, will be the awareness of a new point of view. So these two are going to be working together. Is eroticism, is eros, sex being one aspect of eros, is eros and its creativity are intimately tied together. So what we look at is creative development and how he's addressing the problems of our time. We'll also be looking at his personal development because they go hand in hand. Again, not separating spirit and matter.
Gary?
Yeah.
When you dream of a figure in your dream and it's the same sex as you, I've often heard that your shadow form. So he's also a positive shadow?
Well, you could look at him as a positive shadow. We'll be talking about that if we don't get to it this week, probably next time. Actually, he's a self figure. Mm-hmm. So that a figure of your own sex can either be a shadow figure or a self figure. And we'll talk about why they reach that conclusion. This is Jung's Philemon. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Just before we get into what he says, you know, where can you see in the dream that Pally's depressed?
The flood?
Mm-hmm. He's being overwhelmed. So that flood is his being overwhelmed with guilt and depression at what the bomb did. And you can see in the dream, it has a purpose. It's to make him pay attention. You can see what a nasty thing Prozac is, or can be. These depressions are purposeful very often, and they need to be heard, and when they're heard, the water runs off. The depression subsides.
You said it took a year, though, right?
Yeah.
So it took a year of working with these
animals. Probably, I would say, it was to make sure... Make sure he didn't...
Got the message?
Got the message. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The other thing is that... it's the Persian who's behind him, and the blonde man. Now, what do you make of the Persian? I racked my brains on this, and I think I finally figured it out. I don't think the author does an adequate job. I had a hard time trying to decide, because we don't know. I asked Dave, and he didn't have a sense either. Is this a modern Persian or an ancient Persian? Because of the history of Persia, you know, Islam is a late occurrence. Islam converted to Islam what? 8th century?
Yeah, about 640.
Maybe 640, okay, 7th century. So I don't know whether he's talking about a Muslim Persian or a pre-Muslim Persian. Actually, the more I thought about it, I don't think it matters.
When did... Was it Iran that's Persian?
Yeah.
Or Iraq?
Iran.
Oh. Iran?
But you're getting...
When did it become Persian? When did it become Iran?
Oh, real recently. Like Shah, huh? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think he would he have said Iranian? It's one of these things, like Europeans don't think in terms of countries very often. You know, they might not say, oh, he's an Italian, but he's a Tuscan. So I don't know what he means exactly. But again, I don't think it matters. But if we go back to the earliest religion in Iran, in Persia...
Zarathustra.
Thus spoke Zarathustra. This is Zarathustra.
Well, you know what came to my mind? The wise men were supposed to have been Persian.
We're going to see this guy is definitely not Christian.
Okay.
I'm afraid. Okay. Yeah. I am thinking this, when Nietzsche wrote Thus Spoke Zarathustra, I've got to tell you, even though we spent 70,000 years on it, I never understood, Nietzsche, why did you pick Zarathustra? I thought, what a stupid idea. Because it's so foreign to our experience. And if you want to write a book that sells, it would have been much more poetic, and Nietzsche certainly had an ear for poetry, to write it in a figure that we have some relationship to. But I think Nietzsche was picking up that the resurfacing of something of this time is something we have to come to terms with. And we're seeing it right in Pali's dream. So everything we studied in Thus Spoke Zarathustra, those of you who stuck it out, I think it's going to be relevant to Pali's dreams. Now, what was Zarathustra, and why did Nietzsche pick him? And that will help us understand this dream.
But I think we got to remember that Jung said that Zarathustra, I guess you call it religion, is really a backbone of Christianity, but never owned up to by Christianity.
Exactly. And so why did Zarathustra come back? You remember the story? Should I give the story? Maybe I should give it just a quick summary of the story. I don't want to take up too much time, because you've already done it, but Nietzsche thus spoke Zarathustra in 1878. I think it took him a couple of years, but that's roughly the time. And in the book, Zarathustra is the main figure. He goes into the forest and spends time as a hermit and gets sick of it and comes back down to the world. On the way in and on the way out, he meets a Christian ascetic, referring to the time that Christianity went into the desert and the monasteries, that emphasized the non-worldly, spirit-seeking dimension of Christianity. And on the way out, Nietzsche sees this monk, and he says to the monk, "Haven't you heard?" He says, "Are you still worshiping God?" And then he says to the monk, "Don't you know God's dead?" And then he continues. That's this idea of the death of the birth of God. That's the first place it was written in that book. And then he goes out, and the book has got a whole bunch of stuff, which we don't have to worry about. But the way Jung worked with it was Zarathustra is an image in the collective unconscious, which at the one time, as you rightly say, led to the worldview that Christianity was built on. Namely, there is a split between good and evil, and there is a split between spirit and matter. Those two assumptions are the underpinnings of Zarathustrianism. You also will hear it called Zoroastrianism. I think that's the Greek word for it. And that set into motion the fundamental tone of Christianity and Western civilization, which has now run its course. Because it is time to overcome the split between spirit and matter. And this is spelled out in the book. This is what Zarathustra is saying in the book. That's what he's doing. And Jung's feeling is that shows that there's a movement in the collective unconscious now for a fundamental shift in Western civilization to begin healing the split that Christianity caused. And that's why Zarathustra is returning. The problem is that Zarathustra is simply an image of a collective drive to overturn an old value system. And he himself does not care whether that happens at the cost of great human suffering. So as far as Jung is concerned, Zarathustra is behind World War I and World War II. That is the destruction of the old first medieval and then Victorian security and certainty. But behind all that is this drive to reevaluate those two fundamental tenets of our time, split between matter and spirit, and the split between good and evil.
So you call Zarathustra that force in the unconscious that wants to heal the split, and also the symbol of the original, of the split,
yes,
in the beginning.
Right. Split in the beginning, who has lived an ascetic life himself and is now sick of it. So that would be the side of us that's sick of this value system and is now coming back to heal the very split it caused. No, I think our author completely missed that. But I think that's what the Persian is about. So the Persian is, as we've been talking about, and I think it fits completely, the drive in Pauli's psyche to investigate the split between spirit and matter in science. The split between good and evil in science. To try now to construct a science that doesn't repeat the errors of the past. And where that very first image we've seen of time is not strange. Science has cut off one whole dimension of time. We've just seen one example. We're going to be seeing many other places where this applies. Yeah.
I have a question, because I kept seeing this as an alchemical figure, the figure about the Persian as representing somehow alchemy, as a way of steering Pali, in a sense, because the Greek alchemical texts were translated into Arabic and were able to then survive the depredations of the Dark Ages. Then they were retranslated back in the Andalusian Spain, and the tremendous revival of culture and stuff that occurred with that, so the revivifying effect that information had, which was a precursor to science, which didn't have this subject-object dualism, which had this other orientation that is being urged upon Pauli through these images. And I also think this is a future thing.
They're the same. Alchemists were working with that same, trying to overcome that same split that the return of Zarathustra is meant to address. Definitely.
Did alchemists know, though, that what they were working on was internal?
No.
Okay, that was...
No. In Jung's mind, this is all just a drive on the part of the collective unconscious, which makes us its plaything. Mm-hmm. And they took it on one level. Mm-hmm. We've got to see the truth in it, but then take it on another level. I think as I said, understanding its relationship to Islam, I think it fits too. This gets people upset when I say this, so hang on. But if you listen to the Islamic criticism of the West, it's that we separate spirit and matter. Well, I told you it gets people upset. In their mind, they don't. For them, spirit is law. So they want the law and the material to coexist. Now, that's an adequate solution for them. It's not an adequate solution for us. Let me try a different way. You may have had the experience, if you've done dream work, that you can have a negative dream figure, but it has a positive meaning for you. That's how I would understand the Islamist criticism of us. In itself, it's hypocritical and unjust, but as an irritant in our psyche, it represents the same dynamism as the return of Zarathustra, because they are upset with us for our split between matter and spirit. They don't want shopping centers built without asking the will of Allah. See what I'm saying? They don't want a separation of church and state. I'm not trying to justify that point of view. I'm just trying to look at its compensatory meaning. So if you look at it in that sense, you can see there is a similarity between the Persian as Zarathustra and the Persian as a Islamic fundamentalist, because they both have the same message. Whether or not that message is hypocritical or not isn't the point, because we're concerned about their psyche, we're concerned about their message, which is we split spirit and matter. So that's what I think the Persian is doing here. Yeah, happy with that?
No.
It's not a level of surrender. I mean, it's what orientation. And in the West, the idea of surrender is totally anathema.
It's something the mystics espouse, and they're generally
persecuted.
Yeah.
But that feels on some level like going back to that unconscious state, you know, that Neumann talked about. You know. And then instead of going forward,
No, you're right. If you look at what the Islamists are saying, they have united spirit and matter because they've never separated
it.
I agree. What I'm looking at is not the truth of their statement with respect to them, but with respect to us. Now, we're not going to achieve what they consider the proper union of matter and spirit. I'm just trying to hear their criticism and look at the role of Zarathustra and see the similarities. We have to move forward, which would probably irritate them all the more. But that's not the point from the point of view of the unconscious.
So we will hopefully evolve to a third way.
Yeah.
That will be back to this.
We've got to move forward to a reunification of spirit and matter.
Back to the future.
Back to the future, yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
You know, I say that because I wanted to do justice to... I hate just taking a dream image and giving my opinion of it. Rather, try and look at its possible meanings. I think the real meaning is Zarathustra, but it's not completely clear in the text, so I just tried to link up how it could be, how an Islamic fundamentalist could have the same meaning. And these people are appearing in our dreams today. And I think that's what they have to do with. When they appear in dreams, they are threatening, but they are not negative.
They're not what?
They're not negative. They are threatening, but they are not negative. They're asking for a new synthesis in people's dreams around the area of having disowned the body. Now, why would the psyche pick that when they have women who can't show their faces? Because the psyche is using them not as what they are, but as part of its language. I've seen several dreams like that. I've never seen that before. But here it is in Pali's dreams, that it's the Persian who is now starting a process where Pali is going to get depressed, disoriented, and the purpose of it is to bring into Pali's own life this question of the unity of spirit and matter, as it refers to him as a human being, as a lover, and as a scientist.
What do you make of this instrument for flooding the
cosmic rays?
A flood in the city. I mean, you just see that it's simply depression.
Where's that?
In the dream.
I'm 24.
Water will come up to the houses.
Apparatus?
Yes.
The dream on page 24.
The force of water higher than the houses.
Oh! The apparatus doesn't do it. The man does it. He sees this apparatus for the experimental investigation of cosmic rays.
Oh, that's going to happen.
And then the man says, "You have to force the water up."
So that the city dwellers will believe you. Is that kind of like a threatening kind of thing, like God would do?
Yeah, absolutely. You see, the psyche has a purpose of intent, and it creates problems for drawing our attention to issues that need to be developed in ourselves. And we look at these problems as something that should be gotten rid of, rather than as something pointing us to our next task. And I think that's what the depression in the water is doing for Pally.
No, I also saw the A because that's infinity. And you know, it's connected, matter, spirit.
Absolutely.
Okay, but it's the continuum to keep going back.
That's the good omen in the dream.
Yeah.
But you're asking about the apparatus and the cosmic rays. What do you make of that? Pali gives his own interpretation. Mm-hmm. The cosmic rays in the dreams are not the real cosmic rays of physics. Cosmic rays would be like X-ray and radiation coming from the heavens, which physicists investigate as to the nature of what the nature of radiation tells us about the way that the universe is constructed. They are actually super personal archetypal contents, but not yet made more specific. You see how that fits in with what we just said? Does it make sense? No. The apparatus for investigating cosmic rays would be Pauli's capacity to investigate the emanations of the self. Rays here would be the messages sent by the self.
Oh, I see.
And that's the same thing, or that requires that Pauli get depressed because he needs to get a little bit of arrogance knocked out of him to listen to this. So that the words of the Persian and the cosmic rays are the same thing. Does that make sense? No.
Not to me, but then, you know, I mean, that's really complicated to me.
Okay, let's try and make sense of it.
Okay.
The Persian is saying to... We don't have the Persian in this dream. The Pauli says, in an earlier dream, I had the same kind of theme, and it was the Persian calling the causing the flood. So the Persian would represent the need for Pauli to begin to address the spirit, the split between spirit and matter. Mm-hmm. Why is it the blonde guy and not a Persian in this dream? Well, we'll have to figure that out. But for the moment, let's consider them the same. They're not the same, but they're close. They're close enough for our first approximation. So there's something in Pauli saying, you have to begin addressing yourself to this problem, or I'm going to make you depressed, and I'm going to see you stay depressed. That's the depression, and that's the Persian, and that's the blonde. The cosmic rays would just be another image for the message emanating from the Persian. The words coming out of the Persian's mouth is symbolized by the radiation coming from the heavens.
Okay.
It's a new feature of knowledge, a new dimension of life is trying to come through Pauli, and it's symbolized by the words of the Persian and by the rays of the heavens.
Okay.
And the casket would contain the tools to be able to understand that.
Why is it a casket?
Why is it a casket?
Both things have to die.
No. Or maybe this is a faculty that we once had as human beings, and it has died, and we've got to bring it back.
I don't think it's a casket like today. It's like a heavy trunk.
I don't know. I don't think he says that. Let me check the German again, too, to be sure. But I'm thinking it means a casket.
So out of the post comes the casket. The post producing it itself.
The post means the mail.
Oh, out of the mail. Okay.
M-A-I-L. Yeah, so he gets a casket delivered in the mail. So, yeah, I don't... That's a good question. Yeah.
Metal, strong boxes.
It is a little weird. Somebody would send you a casket. I'll check that. I should bring my German with me when I'm here.
Well, also, I want to be the death of the old you, then?
Well, it's the death of an old view, but it's a view that wants to be resuscitated.
Okay.
So I think.
That's the going back.
The light then.
Yeah. Now, we're going to be seeing, I think, well, we probably won't get to it today, but the next, one of the next big dreams introduces to us this kind of stereo thinking we're going to have to be doing to look at how this problem looks in Pauli and in science and in our time and where this problem started historically. It started at the beginning of the scientific revolution. So, in that sense, this casket, if it is a casket, dead people casket, would probably represent an earlier way of understanding life that got buried at the beginning of the scientific revolution.
Is Descartes the beginning of modern Chinese Revolution?
Yeah.
Or talking even further back?
No, Descartes, well, the two figures we'll be looking at are Johannes Kepler and, who was Descartes? I can't. Well, I actually have it, because we're going to talk about it eventually. What do I do with it? I don't have to decor. I'll check that. I know where we're going to pick up is around 1600. I think Descartes was earlier.
I think
the French
1500s, I think. Copernicus, we'll talk about this. Copernicus was 1530, Galileo 1609, Kepler 1614. We're going to have a dream of the Inquisition coming up. And that's 1633. So, I'll check on that. I don't know exactly. But yeah, it's, I mean, for all practical purposes. When Descartes says, I think I am, that's the beginning of the whole problem. Actually, I took a course in Descartes, I may have said. I can't believe I did that, but I did. And the Latin is, he says there were two kinds of things.
Did I mention this to you? No. Never forget this. The rays called the tongs and the rays extends that. Ray is thing, and cogitans is thinking, and extends it as extending.
So this is the basic, beginning the basic Western model. There is my mind, and there are things, and they're separate. And my mind, as an objective entity, looks at the objective reality of things. See, it completely splits spirit and matter. Which was, in a way, necessary at its time. But we are now going to try to see how what is going on in Pali's mind is exactly what's going on in scientific worldviews. The unconscious of the scientist and the nature of the material world can't be separated. And it certainly can't be separated in a synchronicity. Don't worry, this doesn't make sense. Well, these are the ideas we'll be pursuing at length. But this is where Descartes is one of the players. I'll have to check what year that came out. I'm thinking 1543, but I'm not for sure.
And what was the second one?
Rays extends, E-X-T-E-N-S-A.
And that means?
Extended.
Extended.
So there are thinking things and extended things. There are minds, thinking things, and there are objects, extended things. That's the basic worldview. I see you. I am separate, you are separate, I see you. I see the table. That's the basic idea. And the table and my mind have nothing to do with each other other than I see it. But we know that table can become a synchronistic moment. So mind and spirit aren't separated.
Can I ask a question about this Catholic business here?
Yeah.
You know, thinking of like the Rosarium series of alchemical drawings, I mean, where you have the king and the queen lying down and basically a crypt or some sort of casket, could that be like the casket be symbolic of the alchemical container under in which this action must occur, and then the flood is something to do with like solutio or something?
Yeah,
or?
Absolutely. Definitely. The flood, those of you who've done alchemy, is a solutio. And what we get here is the solutio is sent by a higher authority.
Well, Hermes would be the character who delivered the mail, so to speak.
Well, the
messenger of the god.
The mythological parallel to the stranger and the master and the blonde and the Persian is Mercurius. Hmm. These are all different manifestations of Mercurius.
And then getting the water stuff with this convinced people, I mean, it's like the spirit, if you will, for lack of a better word, let's get them up, let's get this up there so the whole populace will, it says, believe you, that they'll begin to get it.
Yeah, I would think, I would take that on two levels. One, they are the collective point of view in Pali himself. But I think it's also the world, that this is behind much of our problem today, that the psyche is creating such a mess because it wants us to reevaluate some of these fundamental assumptions.
Well, look what just happened in New Orleans. The city. Now they're going to rebuild it. In fact, they didn't want it.
Yeah. If you listen to this metaphor, I mean, I want to get into politics here, but listen to American foreign policy. It's all us versus them at stake. Never do we have a right to do that. Are we any better than them? And so on. You see, it creates a subject-object split, and the subject is usually right, and the object is usually questionable or in need of attention. And the ego never thinks it's manipulating the object. It thinks it's in the service of the goodness, of the well-being of that object. But there's a huge shadow there that the ego is manipulating the object. And there are plenty of nations that are sick and tired of being manipulated. Like science will say, well, we're just trying to create knowledge, and Pali is going to be saying, no, we're trying to control events. That's what science is also about. Not to denigrate the positive value of what the knowledge that science has given us, but now to begin to address the shadow of that. Starting in himself.
Well, no wonder he didn't understand that. Had such a hard time.
Well, it's an enormous.
Yeah.
But he had Jung.
Yeah. Whereas Nietzsche did.
Nietzsche did.
He didn't have anybody.
Yeah.
So he went nuts, but Pali at least had. Well,
I think this thing, as far as, it might be more, but the three places I know this has surfaced, one is in Nietzsche, others in Van Gogh, and the others in Wagner. Hmm. The storm at the beginning of the ring, that's the flood. I think these guys were all wrestling with the fact that we are going to be assaulted by something, which on the face of it is overwhelming and disturbing, but if we know how to work with it, we can see it is meant to draw our attention to these cosmic rays, so to speak. So you can see we're looking at Pali's psyche for his own life and how his own life was such an epitome for the life of our time. Which is why we work with the concept of the collective unconscious. We don't try to see people apart from their time and help them link up with the time. Let's see, I think that's the main. The other point maybe I'll just mention. Well, the keys in the center, we talked about that hopefully. Next to the last full paragraph on 25, the keys form a circle so that the mandala is the answer and it's the key to his own development, namely a new relationship to the self, which is the Persian. Now, tell me if this doesn't make sense, because if you don't tell me, I'll keep going, but if you are confused, I'll stop. Okay? We won't have time to do the last dream, the next dream, but let me just read it to you. It's a blockbuster. I don't have the date there, but I now found it. It's October 28th, 1946. See, so he had come back, what did we say, February of 46? I think he said. So he's just back in Zurich now for 6 months. February 46 he came back. So he's been back 6 months. I'll read it and then we'll pick up with it next time. But it's a wonderful dream. And you're going to see it's springing up now out of the stream. We're going to go back and look at the birth of science. Because the dream uses historical images, which are important both to understand their metaphoric meaning in his dream, for him personally, and also help us understand what got lost at the birth of science, both for him as a scientist personally, and but also for our time. So we'll look at this dream both on a personal and collective level. But just for the moment, let's just hear it. The blonde. Oh, wait, we didn't talk about the difference between the blonde and the Persian, but we will. One is one aspect of the knowledge, the other is the other aspect, but let's not get too confused. The blonde is standing next to me. So we're back to the same theme as the previous dream. In an ancient book, I am reading about the Inquisition trials against the disciples of Copernicus. Remember, Copernicus Galileo got axed because he was supportive of Galileo and was censored in the Inquisition. Galileo is one Giordano Bruno, who was burned at the stake for his views, as well as about Kepler's image of the Trinity. I'll go back with you, and we'll look at the origin of science through the work of those guys next week. Then the blonde said, "The men whose wives have objectified rotation are being tried." These words upset me greatly. The blonde disappears, and to my consternation, the book also becomes a dream image. I find myself in a courtroom with the other accused men. I want to send my wife a message, and I write a note. "Come at once, I am on trial." It is getting dark, and for a long time I cannot find anyone to give the note to. But finally a Negro comes along and says in a friendly way that he will deliver the note to my wife. Soon after the Negro has left with the note, my wife turns up, in fact, and says to me, "You forgot to say goodnight to me." Now it starts to get lighter, and the situation is as it was at the beginning, except that my wife is present too. The blonde is standing next to me once more, and I am reading the ancient book again. Then the blonde says to me sadly, apparently referring to the book, "The judges do not know what rotation or revolution is, and that is why they cannot understand the men." With the insistent voice of a teacher, he goes on to say, "But you know what rotation is." "Of course," is my immediate reply. "The circulation of the blood and the circulation of light. All that is part of the basic rudiments." This seems to be a reference to psychology, but the word is never mentioned. Whereupon the blonde says, "Now you understand the men whose wives have objectified their rotation for them." Then I kiss my wife and say to her, "Good night. It is terrible what these poor people who have been charged are going through." I go very sad and start crying. But the blonde says with a smile, "Now you've got the first key in your hand." That's what I call a big dream. And it's 2:30. We'll pick up with that next time.
Well, so in German, it's spirit equals Geist equals mind and spirit. Mm-hmm. How do they differentiate in their language?
They do have the word intellect.
You know that series.
I want to check whether the word intellect is used, or whether the word Geist.
I see.
Geist means two. Where's the word intellect?
Because the word is translated as intellect here.
Yeah, I've got to check that. This is one reason why I'm doing this, so you folks can look at these details and help clarify what other readers are going to be asking.